Dis 'n Dinsdag aand jy luister na Geestesgesondheid. My naam is Christel Webb-Joubert. Vanaand het ek 'n gas vir die heel eerste keer hier op Geestesgesondheid. Dit is Laurel Doman. Laurel, baie welkom op Geestesgesondheid.
Baie dankie Christel, ek waardeer opreg die geleentheid om saam met jou te gesels. Ek dink ek gaan makliker in Engels gesels, so as dit okay is met jou, sal dit vir my beter wees as ek jou vra in Engels beantwoord.
Absoluut. Ek wil tog vir die luisteraar sê, Laurel is baie meer gemaklik in Engels en hierdie is vir my so 'n belangrike onderwerp dat ek dink ons gaan 'n onreg daaraan doen as sy heeltyd aan die Afrikaanse woorde moet dink. So, vergewe ons asseblief van vanaand se onderhoud is in Engels. Laurel, jy's 'n fisioterapeut, maar jy's eintlik soveel meer as 'n fisioterapeut.
So Christel, my main practice is obviously physiotherapy, as you mentioned, but there's a whole bunch of other additional practices that I've included to better myself as a practitioner and to really tend to patients' needs. Because I read a thing once that said, people don't care about your business, they care about their problems. And if you solve their problems, they'll support your business. So it's always tricky to think of healthcare in terms of a business, but I really enjoyed that phrase because I thought, I am passionate about solving people's problems. And in order to solve their problems, I had to kind of dig a little bit deeper as to what are the add-ons that I can add to my practice to facilitate the best healthcare intervention that I possibly can. So I've got a postgraduate in orthopedic manual therapy is what it's called. So that's your general physio stuff, knee pain, neck pain, back pain, post-surgery rehab, sports injuries. But then the additional practices that I've added is craniosacral therapy, applied kinesiology, visceral manipulation, which is just a fancy word for treating into the organs. And I work from a vantage point of functional and integrative medicine. So the most important thing about functional and integrative medicine is the question that we ask. So instead of asking what, so what diagnosis and what medication, we ask why. Why is your body doing what it does? Because generally I find symptoms are merely a warning sign that there's something else going on. So by asking why, you get to a very much more thorough root cause as opposed to just looking at what the symptom manifestation is. So that's what functional and integrative medicine is trademarked by. Then I also work on the principle that your biography becomes your biology. So I pay very careful attention to the stories people tell me in practice because I find that it gives me such incredible clues to what's actually going on and why they are presenting with the symptoms that they're presenting.
Nou sien, dit is wat my interesseer en dit is hoekom ek besluit het om met jou te gesels. Want hierdie program se naam is Geestesgesondheid, so dit gaan uit die aard van die saak oor die geestesgesondheid, die geesteswelstand van 'n persoon. Verstaan ek jou reg as jy sê, jou storie, jou narratief, beïnvloed jou fisiologiese welstand. Met ander woorde, jou storie, dit wat met jou gebeur het, kan 'n invloed hê op jou fisiese welstand. Dit kan jou siek maak.
That's absolutely correct, Christel. So, being a physio, I get to spend a lot of time with patients, which is a privilege because you build a really good relationship with them and you establish a very nice rapport. So when I was finished with university, I was young and enthusiastic and I was ready to apply all my book knowledge to anyone who was willing to sit still enough. But the more I worked with patients, the more I realized that bodies tell stories. So instead of applying my book knowledge to them, I realized that every single patient that crosses my threshold is actually the best source of information for their own wellness journey. So instead of speaking so much, which I'm pretty good at, I started listening. And I started listening with my, not just with my head, but I started listening with my heart too. So I always say, what I want to understand is what people mean, not necessarily what they say. Because often what they say and what they mean are not the same thing. But I started listening with intention to what it was that people had to say about what they were suffering or what the experience of their symptoms are. And that gave me significant insight into what was going on in their bodies. And that actually led me down the path, or it's led me down the path of trying to understand how the biography influences the biology. And we're fortunate to be in the generation or the information era. So there is so much wonderful information out there. So without a doubt, definitely your narrative influences what goes on in your physiology.
Nou kyk, daar's stories en daar's stories. So wat is dit nou eintlik waarna jy aandag gee in mense se stories.
It's important for the listeners to understand that my emphasis on story is not to create something out of nothing. So some people don't necessarily want to talk about what's going on in their lives, and I'm willing, I can deal with all sorts. Some people need to tell their story a whole lot, and other people don't want to tell me their story at all. I can work with each of these individuals. So there's not an overemphasis on the emotional undercurrent and its effect on your physical body. But there definitely are certain parallels that I can see in people. When people tell me their story, I can see the symptoms that they present with. And it's just having insight into how these two influence one another. So there's an American motivational speaker by the name of Louise Hay. And she spent her whole life looking for for emotional causes for certain ailments. And her journey was interesting because it was through the treatment of her own cancer that she actually created this philosophy. And she wrote many books and did a lot of talks. And there's definitely merit in her work. But I don't try and draw parallels between, or I don't look for emotional reasons for people's physical ailments. I just like to listen to where they're stuck emotionally and how that prevents healing in their physical, you know, in their physical well-being. So I'll give you an example. I often find that someone with very perfectionistic tendencies or control issues will present with certain physical ailments. So things like adrenal fatigue or anxiety or headaches or tummy problems. So it's looking at how personality types as well as past traumas actually influence what manifests in our bodies. What I also find is that often physical symptoms will be a warning sign that your body isn't coping with the current circumstances. So what happens is if you just take medication to stop that symptom, it's like switching off a lighthouse, because that physical symptom is actually serving to warn you that your body can't cope with the situation it finds itself in. For example, developing headaches because of an unhealthy working environment or a toxic relationship or an unsupportive relationship. If you just carry on drinking headache tablets to try and suppress the symptom, your body, you're actually doing yourself a disservice, because instead of paying attention to the lighthouse, you're just switching it off. And if you switch a lighthouse off, ships go to wreck. So I'm interested in the aspect of where people's narrative is preventing them from recovering from their symptoms, because physical symptoms are often a warning sign that there's emotional blockages or childhood traumas that are unresolved or scars or things that demand your attention that you're not paying attention to. So I listen to a story to find out what underlying cause is leading to the current symptoms.
Jo, dis vir my geweldig interessant. Ek hoop ons gaan later praat oor hoe jy dit reg kry en wat daaraan gedoen kan word. Maar ek wil eers weet, watter tipe stories is dit waaraan jy belangstel?
So I am interested in every single story. The first word that I'm going to use here, and I believe that it requires specific justification, is the word trauma. So people often feel guilty to use the trauma because they look at their lives and think, I've had a fairly sort of amicable childhood. I'm well off. I've got a supportive family, all sorts of things. So they don't feel that they're worthy of the word trauma. But I just want it understood that you most certainly can suffer from PTSD without being a war veteran. It's not a diagnosis that is specifically reserved for people with very significant traumas. Now, don't get me wrong, I deal with very significant traumas, but I kind of want to make it understood that this is an all-inclusive thing. It's not just for people that have suffered harrowing pasts. Mm. It's also for It's simple struggles that we all face on a daily basis, and I'll get back to that a little bit or in a little while. But I listen to every aspect of the story, because trauma, you can suffer trauma without it necessarily being a very weighted trauma. So in my practice, I have created the concept of macro traumas and micro traumas. So macro traumas are generally the well-documented traumas, and they're traumas that, if you're looking for support for them and if you're willing to confront these traumas, there's usually a magnitude of information available. So that's things like rape, home invasions, dreaded disease, any sort of trauma, childhood traumas, any sort of trauma that you can think of. There are hashtags that support them on Instagram. If it's the hashtag MeToo's, it's, if anyone's willing to speak up about these traumas, they probably will find a whole lot of support for them. So I do deal with those sorts of traumas, but I love looking at micro traumas as well. So when I refer to a micro trauma, what I'm speaking about here is things that are wrapped up in our belief systems. And when I speak about belief systems, I mean information that is trapped in our subconscious mind, and they're generally simple ideas. So from a very young age, you're very impressionable, and things happen to you as a result of your background, your cultural context. And so you accumulate a whole bunch of ideas about what life is like. So I'll give you examples of things. So the success that you deserve, how deserving you are of love, how you're received in society and how you're received by your peers. All of these facilitate certain belief systems that get stuck in your subconscious mind and then facilitate how you interact in the world and how the world plays out around you. So the micro traumas are not necessarily, as I said, such well-documented, very weighty traumas, but they are traumas that we're faced with every single day. Because every single day we take a look at ourselves in the mirror and make a comment about what our bodies look like. Every single day we have to negotiate how motivated we are to get up and do our job. Every single day we're confronted with behavior patterns that play out in our relationships. Every single day we pass on certain things that happen to us and certain ideas about the world. We pass on to our children and to the people around us. So these micro traumas are, as I say, wrapped up in belief systems, and they're the things that lie in your subconscious mind and manifest in the world around you. So macro traumas and micro traumas are significant parts of our narrative and our stories. And these are the things that I listen to when I'm treating a patient, to see where people are tripping up, where they're sabotaging themselves, where unhelpful belief systems are holding us back from reaching our full potential.
Maar hoe werk dit? Hoe werk dit dat, as jy vir jouself in die spieël kyk, dit wat jy dink, 'n invloed kan hê fisies op jou? As jy ongelukkig is in jou werk, ek meen jy het nou magdom voorbeelde gewys. Al daai goeters, hoe werk dit dan nou?
Okay, Christelle, so the answer to this is actually twofold. Firstly, how the body stores the story, and then what happens to the body as a result of the story. So we see evidence that our emotions influence our body. When we're happy, we can't help but smile. If we're unhappy, we're stressed, we'll feel our neck tighten up. We might feel an emptiness in our tummy or a knot on our tummy. So all of this is evidence that what happens in, or what the emotions that we experience in our body actually have an influence on what's going on in our physiology. So there's three more recent schools of thought and fields of study that have given us the most information about how your biography actually influences your biology. So the three fields of study are neurosciences, developmental psychopathology, and interpersonal neurobiology. So these three fields of study give us insight into what actually happens in the brain chemistry as a result of trauma, the effect of trauma on the development of our body and of our health, and then as well as how these certain traumas and incidents that happen to us actually influence the people around us. So as a result of these three studies, we have a very much better understanding to what the effect of trauma actually is on the body, and specifically on the brain chemistry. So the most common analogy that I use in my practice to describe how stress or trauma actually influences the body is the following. So in a day when you go about your work normally and it's a calm day and everything kind of happens as it's the mundane that goes on. So you go to bed or you wake up in the morning, you tend to your responsibilities, you go to work, you come home, you have dinner, you play with your cats, and then you go to bed. A day like that is absolutely fine, and there's nothing sort of out of the ordinary that your body has to cope with. So your brain serves as the secretary of the body. So in a day like that, your brain gets handed a stack of papers and it has to file those papers. So it goes about the filing and it manages to put everything in order from A to Z, what happened in a day. In a day where you face something either that's overwhelming, even that's just unfamiliar, it doesn't even have to be so traumatic, but it might be something that takes you out of your norm or out of your routine, the brain secretary is handed a whole bunch of papers, and what it has to do with those papers is it has to file them. But because everything that happened in the day is more overwhelming than what the secretary can actually cope with, she tries to file all the papers, but some of them she can't get to. So then the paperwork becomes all messed up, and there's papers lying on the desk. Some of the papers end up in your handbag. Some of them end up under your car seat. Some of them end up in the cupboard under the sink. And then when you're dealing with something completely unrelated, these papers pop up. Wow. And examples of this is when we, what you know, when something very simple triggers an unnatural emotional response in us. So, for example, you're carrying bags from the shop, one breaks and it tears open, and then you burst into tears as though the world has come to an end. Or if you're driving in traffic and you have an unnatural aggressive reaction towards a small trigger. So what happens when your body has unprocessed stress? Your secretary couldn't tend to all the paperwork, and then the paperwork becomes chaotic, and it actually lands up raising its head at inopportune moments. And things that shouldn't really cross-pollinate or influence one another, they land up, you, as I say, you have an exaggerated to an exaggerated result to a very small incident. So the way all that information is stored in the brain and in your nervous system, and it's as a result of certain incidents happening to you. Does that answer your question?
Absoluut. Absoluut. Ja, ek dink my sekretaresse werk party daaroor tyd hoor.
Ons almal sin. En Christel, especially at the moment, what I find is, I mean, I know, I almost don't even want to speak about it, because even just speaking about it the whole time aggravates the narrative. But with the stress of COVID, we've all had to deal with so much more. And this is an example, even if you haven't been adversely affected by the everything that's happening by COVID, because it's so unfamiliar, it's also experienced by your body as a stress. So a lot of people have suffered immense losses, and they have reason to feel traumatized. But people feel come to my practice and say and feel guilty. They're like, our business has been fine. The worst thing that has happened is we can't travel, but I still feel so anxious. And it's because it's so unfamiliar that your brain secretary is like, this isn't the normal paperwork that I have to file. Yeah. So yeah. So as I said, I didn't want to mention it because I think everyone's tired of hearing it, but it's a prime example of how traumatic experiences cause a lot of chaos in our system. I mean, in our system, but unfamiliar experiences also cause a lot of chaos in our system.
Ek is bly jy noem dit, want ek dink baie mense ondervind simptome wat eintlik meer oor stres gaan, oor daai angs, maar dan dink hulle dadelik hulle het COVID. Verstaan ek mens, selfs al het jy nie hoofpyn.
Yes. Okay. So that's actually those three fields of study that I mentioned explain why that happens, because there's an upregulation in your body's alarm system. So your brain takes things that are actually benign and sets off the entire it mobilizes the entire fire squad and sends out every security personnel in the body to sort of say, there's chaos, and then it was actually an insignificant trigger. So that is as a result of the upregulation of the brain's alarm system. So it's a normal, I see it all the time.
Ja, want ek meen, ek kyk nuus, en ek kyk na die COVID-gevalle, en dan ek skielik keelseer.
Ja, dan ook. I saw a status update that I put on 2019 in February, when I said, does anyone else develop an insatiable face itch every time they walk into Woolworths? And that was when we weren't even wearing masks yet, we weren't locked down, but everyone was like, don't touch your face, don't touch. I was like, why is my nose itching all of a sudden? That never itches when I walk into Woolworths under normal circumstances, but now it does. So yes, we ons almal het daai storie van hoe ons brein speletjies speel met ons.
Ja. Ek gesels met Laurel Doman en ons gesels oor hoe jou storie, jou narratief 'n invloed kan hê op jou fisiese gesondheid. Nou Laurel, ek dink luisteraars sit en luister nou en hulle dink, okay, goed. Maar hoe gaan ek nou weet of my storie die rede is vir my fisiese welstand? Hoe gaan mens weet? Want ek kan met hoofpyn of maagpyn of wat ook al rondloop. Hoe gaan ek weet of dit my stories se skuld is?
Okay. Christel, that's a very good question. So the thing that I really want the listeners to understand is, when you ask yourself that question, make sure that your motive isn't to look for something to blame. So it's not saying that my health is a problem because of my daddy issues, or because I have an abusive boss, or because... So it's always unhelpful to look for something to blame as opposed to how to solve something. So when I work with clients, I don't want to argue them into victimhood. I want to empower them with strategies as to how do we acknowledge that your emotional well-being is influencing your physical health, but how do we move on from there? So that is really, really important, a really important take-home message that I'd like to sort of drive home. Okay, so the things that give you an indication that your narrative might be influencing your physical health. There's a few different examples. Okay. So first of all, when certain circumstances in your life exacerbate your physical symptoms, it's a clue that the physical symptoms might be warning you. For example, you're generally fine. I ask you if you struggle with headaches and you say no, unless I'm doing work. So unless I'm in my work environment, and then there's a whole bunch of aspects that we actually have to unpack about that working environment. Is it because you feel you're overworked? Is it because you don't get on with your colleagues? Is it because there's a power struggle between you and your boss? So if you find that certain circumstances exacerbate your physical symptoms, or every time you have a fight with a spouse, your lower back is sore, or if you're worried about money, your lower back is sore, those give you an idea that something in your narrative is influencing your physiology. So that's the one aspect to it. But as I say, once again, I'm not looking for things to blame. I'm looking for solutions. So how do we pay attention to the body's warning system, and how do we actually fix it so that your health improves, but your emotional well-being improves as well? The other thing that gives you a clue that your emotional, that there might be an emotional reason for a physical symptom is if you've been from specialist to specialist to specialist to physician to practitioner to therapist to alternative practitioner, and you're not getting better. So generally what I find, no amount of intervention then is going to fix you. And the secret to your health is actually lying with something that's very much within your reach, but it's something that it might not necessarily suit you. So an example of that is a bad marriage. I mean, that's just one of the most typical things that I see. So people will struggle with pain and headaches, but they know that they're in an emotionally abusive, unsupportive relationship where they have to compromise themselves. Your physical symptoms will remain until you get out of the situation that you're in. And often people, for different reasons, don't necessarily want to get out of a relationship, whether it's because they're worried about their finances, because for religious reasons, they believe they made a promise, or whatever it is, whatever the thing is that makes you feel trapped in a circumstance that you can't get out of, that will exacerbate your physical symptoms. So that's just an example, once again, as I say, where our physical symptoms are a warning sign that there's emotionally something else going on. And then another thing that gives us an indication is when you've done a whole bunch of blood work and you've done a whole bunch of interventions and scans and x-rays and all sorts of things, and everyone keeps suggesting that there's nothing wrong with you. The problem with this is that it makes you feel as though you're losing your mind. You think, maybe I am going crazy. And what I want to suggest there, and this is a part where I'm also very passionate, I love it when someone comes to me and says, I have been from pillar to post and no one's been able to get me better. But it's because they're not looking at the right root causes. So often when all your medical assessments seem to be clear, but you still feel that you're physically ill, that's also an indication that something in your narrative might be tripping up your physiology.
Laurel, so nou kom ek by die groot vraag van die aand. Hoe behandel jy jou kliënte?
Okay. Christel, so the first aspect to this question is, I believe that healing involves a synergy between patient and practitioner. So I really believe that one of the things that play a significant role in my practice is the amount of rapport that I establish with a client. And that, as I say, firstly, when people feel heard, they are willing to tell you, or they are willing to partake in their healing journey. So a big part of it is a synergy between patient and practitioner. Okay, so the actual techniques that I used, as I mentioned, I do craniosacral therapy, visceral manipulation, applied kinesiology. Well, I use my background in applied kinesiology. physiotherapy, and then the vantage point from which I work is functional and integrative medicine. So I use a combination of these various practices to influence the physical effects of trauma. So as I've explained before, there are a few different things that happen in the body. So the first thing is an upregulation of your autonomic nervous system. And your autonomic nervous system is responsible for your fight or flight or freeze response. So I will work at a downregulation of that so that all the effects of that upregulation of that nervous system are actually mitigated. So the things that happen when that nervous system is upregulated is your hormones become imbalanced, your sleep is disrupted, your ability to lose weight is a problem, your digestion is disturbed, your immune system is suppressed. So I use all the various techniques, all the different types of practices to facilitate a downregulation of the autonomic nervous system. And then the next thing that I do for clients is I facilitate a left-right brain integration. So what happens with trauma is that your left and right brain integration actually switches off. So the reason why you want an integrated left and right brain, so let me just describe a little bit to you what it is that each of the hemispheres do. So your left hemisphere is responsible for micro detail, planning for the future. It's your logical, systematic brain. Your right brain is less fussed with time and sort of deadlines, but it is your creative overview. It's the capacity for your mind to pull back the lens and see the wood for the trees. So it's also your creative problem solver. So you want a balance between these two hemispheres so that, yes, you pay attention to all the necessary micro details, but also that you can see the bigger picture. So your left brain counts leaves, your right brain sees the wood for the trees. So I facilitate a balancing between the left and right brain and the actually thickening the corpus callosum in essence between your left and right hemisphere. And the corpus callosum is the nerve endings that connect the two hemispheres. So that's the one aspect, or the second aspect of what it is that I do. And the third aspect of what I do is what I call belief system modification. So I make patients aware of where those micro traumas actually trip them up. And that's by listening to the narrative and seeing where they're sabotaging themselves or where physical symptoms are actually alarm systems for them to pay attention to certain things that are influencing their physical health. And then So as I said, I mean, I've explained the different techniques that I use, and that's what I sort of facilitate. But I can't tell you overall what it is that I do, because every single person is an individual and I listen to their story. So I often joke with clients. I say, I offer the body my menu and then it tells me what it is that it wants. So I say, I do all of these things, chicken or beef, and it orders according to what it is that it believes it needs. And when I speak about offering my menu to the body, it's actually about feeling how the body responds to certain interventions, and then taking that as my cue as to what to do. So I've become a very much better listener, not only to people's stories, but also to what the information that their body provides. And then the things that I treat, so I treat a lot of things that are not necessarily quintessentially associated with physiotherapy. So autoimmune conditions, headaches, which is associated with physiotherapy, but I will work into gut health. I will work into stress management. I will work into trauma, perfectionism, eating disorders, chronic pain, anxiety, depression, because all of these symptoms are warning signs that the body isn't necessarily coping with its narrative. And when I start intervening in your body's stress response and how it buffers all these experiences, then I can help that body secretary file the paperwork accurately. So that is sort of what I do in a nutshell.
Laurel, die rede hoekom ek met jou gesels is omdat iemand my van jou vertel het en die metode hoe jy werk. Is ek reg as ek sê dat jy werk nogals redelik met die wervelkolom, dat as 'n persoon besig is om hulle storie vir jou te vertel, kan jy fisies voel as iets in die storie iets sneller is?
Christelle, so that's it's not really a linear answer that I can give you to that. But, you know, so I always think of Gary Player. He said, the more I practice, the luckier I get. So I that's a statement that I think of so often in my practice, because sometimes I achieve the most incredible results and both me and the patient are surprised. So I know what it is that I do and why I achieve it. But even I am so thankful and humbled and grateful for the outcomes that I get in practice. Okay, so I'll tell you a little bit about possibly, or I'll give you a little bit of an insight into what feedback you receive from a client of mine. Okay, so usually when I chat to a patient, I can hear which words in their narrative are trigger words. I can hear where they're tripping themselves up. And usually when I give that word back to the client, they go, oh, yes, I understand. You know, I understand why I use that word and why it's such an emotional trigger for me. So I guess, once again, as I say, that the more I practice, the luckier I get. I've just developed that skill. So I really, and a big part of it, especially if they're practitioners listening, I stopped, when I said initially, I stopped listening with my head and I started listening with my heart. We are so wrapped up in our sense of responsibility towards patients, and we want to apply so much book knowledge to them, and we want to bring everything that we know to the table, as opposed to stop bringing that which we know and start listening to that which the patient knows, because the patient lives in their body. They have to do with those issues every single day. So one sentence from a patient is worth more than chapters in a textbook. So once again, it's just a skill that I've developed. I've actually started listening with attention to what it is that people say, and then I can pick up certain trigger words where they're tripping themselves up, and then I can give that word back to patients. And then often they draw the parallels for themselves. And then we strategize as to what are the solutions that they can do to fix it. Then from a physical point of view, when I actually work, and I think the secret to this lies in your fascia system. So I'll tell you a little bit about the fascia system later. But when I work with a physical body, I can actually feel changes in the fascial system, in the muscle system, in the cerebrospinal fluid, in the alignment of the spine. And when I work in certain areas, the body gives me the information of what the emotional thing that is stuck there. So this isn't a recipe thing. This isn't like I can say, oh, well, if you were molested as a child, your seventh thoracic vertebra will be out of alignment. It's not like that. Mm-hmm. But your spine serves as a hard drive. I believe your spine serves as a hard drive for your narrative. So it's the guy that backs everything up. And most of your major joints store information. And when I'm working with the joint, whether I'm working into the muscles, working into the fascia system, as I said, I'll tell you a little bit more about that, or I'm working into actually into the physical joint, it often provides information. And so once again, it's not about giving people a reason for their ankle pain. It's not to draw an emotional, it's actually to let it go. And what the body loves is when it can make the connection as to why am I feeling the way that I'm feeling and why is the pain the way that it is. When the brain can actually make that connection as to the between the emotional struggle and the physical pain, it resolves much quicker. So when I say that I find that the answer to this lies in the fascial system. So your fascial system is in essence your body's cling wrap. And it's so when you take chicken skin off chicken flesh, that white webby stuff that exists between the skin and the flesh, that's what your fascial system is. Historically, they kind of said it's scaffolding, it doesn't mean anything. These days, they look at your fascial system as part of your nervous system. So it's actually a communication system in your body. So what I often work on the principle of a given a restriction. So when I work into the fascial system, and that's a hands-on treatment, I will find places where the fascia is stuck. So fascia needs to be able to glide like two panes of glass with a drop of water in between. So it's a viscous system. But if you have a trauma, so scar tissue or a sustained posture or a reoccurring injury, or your systemic inflammation is up, or you have trauma, that fascial system will actually get stuck. And the more I work at dislodging that fascial system, but the more I bring in what emotional things are actually influencing it. And once again, the more I practice, the luckier I get. The more I work with bodies, the more information I actually get from bodies from what physical emotion is actually stuck in that area. And I mean, that's sort of something that I was brave enough to start playing with, and luckily the feedback that I get from clients, they affirm that which I suggest. So there's a lot of science behind it, but there's a little bit of technique and a little bit of magic, and hey, what do you know, people are cured. So I hope that answers your question.
Ja, Laurel, ek wonder nou net, is jy enig in jou soort, of is daar nog ander mense soos jy?
Okay, so there's two aspects to this answer as well. I don't know another physio that has the exact qualifications that I have. I know a lot of physios that have similar qualifications and the same qualifications. How people implement it in their practice is very dependent on the practitioner. So I can't sort of, patients will often say, you know, especially clients of mine that have, for example, moved to Cape Town because I practice in Joburg, will say, how am I going to replace you? Don't you know of someone else? I will generally suggest practitioners that, as I say, have the same qualifications. So whether it's craniosacral therapy or visceral manipulation, that have those practices in their repertoire. But how someone puts it together is a very personal experience. So one of my other, you know, one of my colleagues who I work very closely with, he's a functional medicine practitioner. He sort of said, so many people ask him to teach what it is that he do. And he said to me, how do you teach your intuition? So I don't want to blame everything that I do. Well, I don't want to attribute everything that I do on intuition. But every therapist will bring their own touch to all the qualifications that they have. So the nice thing about it, though, is that I always say that the people who need me find me. And most often people find the practitioner that it is that they need. Every single practitioner has a certain magic and has a certain thing that they bring to a patient. So although, as I said, I don't know someone who practices exactly like me, I know a lot of practitioners who have the same qualification, I really believe that people should open themselves up and just ask about practitioners. And generally, as I say, you will find the person that you need. And there's so many people doing such good work. So I'm not unique in my passion for well-being. I believe that there are a lot of practitioners that are truly, truly enthusiastic about full recovery with their patients. So yes, I hope that answers your question.
Ja, ek en jy gaan weer gesels, want ek weet nog 'n groot passie van jou is ook dat mense hulle self moet kan help. Maar dis 'n gesprek vir 'n ander keer, né?
Yes, absolutely, Christelle. So that is actually, as I said, that is my actual passion. So whenever you asked about practitioners, I don't ever try and breed dependency in patients on me, because I could step off a curb and die tomorrow. So the most important part aspect of health and healing for me is how to empower clients to actually take responsibility for their own health. So if you're willing to have me back, I'd love to do an episode for you where I give people strategies as to how they can actually take control of their own narrative and rewrite their own story, no matter how traumatic their story was. You always have the capacity to rewrite that narrative. That power is in your hands, and it's a choice. And I'd like to equip people with the right information to make the right choices. So I'd love to do another episode with you.
Fantasties. Ons gaan definitief gesels. Intussen, mag luisteraars jou kontak?
Yes, by all means, absolutely. So I want to help as many people as possible. So that's the one thing I've maintained. I always say that we're all going to med school wanting to save one AIDS baby at a time. And I've maintained that passion. I want to help the whole of South Africa. So there's a few, I'll give you my telephone number of my practice and you'll get in touch with my secretary, Pauline. So 071-8979-410 is my practice telephone number. And you can either give us a call or get hold of us on WhatsApp. And then online booking is available on my website too, which is www.domanphysio.com. And there's a lot of information about what it is that I do and also the capacity to make an online booking.
My gas in vanaand se geestesgesondheid was Laurel Doman. Sy's 'n fisioterapeut van Johannesburg. Nou sy het baie vinnig daai telefoonnommer gegee, so ek herhaal. Jy kan haar ontvangsdame Pauline skakel by 071-8979-410. Haar webwerf is www.domanphysio.com. Sy is ook beskikbaar op Facebook en Instagram. Op Facebook kan jy haar gaan soek onder Laurel Doman Physiotherapy. En op Instagram is sy onder Laurel Doman Physiotherapy. En op beide hierdie platforms deel sy gereeld baie interessante inligting. Ek spel gou haar naam. Dis L-A-U-R-E-L en haar van is Doman. Laurel Doman. Tot ek en jy weer saamkuier, mag het met jou goed gaan.